Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time for your Sunrise Guys.
Let me come in.
Oh, come on in, Swag. Water's warm in here, buddy.
Why don't you come on in.
Dirt and Sprague.
I'm going to configure your widget.
I'm all alone over here. I feel like I'm in the corner watching right now.
It's breakfast time.
Hey. Swag's going to go configure Dirt's widget. Oh, my Lord.
Dirt and Sprague.
He configured both our widgets.
Oh, buddy.
On the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number three, Dirt and Sprague here, Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Good morning, everybody.
Let's go!
I'm Dirt, he's Sprague. We switch roles halfway through the show. It doesn't really make a lot of sense, but we've been doing it for a while, so we're going to keep doing it that way.
You were a top, now you're a bottom.
I like being a bottom.
Got to mix it up.
I'll be your bottom. We have a lot to get to over the next 2 hours of radio. Let's take a quick timeout. I need a 30 here, if you will, from the Blazers.
Sure.
Let's give everybody a little bit of a palate cleanser, shall we? A
lot going on in sports this weekend.
There was. The NFL draft was happening. We had some other NBA playoff festivities to get to, and spring games down in Corvallis and Eugene, for those who watched or cared or want to talk about them.
That's
they
a great
did transpire.
Question.
Did you watch any of them? You can 503-864-6326 on that one. Let's start, though, on the NFL draft, shall we?
Oh, man. Winners and losers.
Winners and losers. Go ahead. Give me your five best draft classes and your five worst draft classes.
Well, I can't.
Did we watch any of it this weekend after or Thursday?
No, I followed it. Like, I saw some of the local names.
Yeah,
being
curious.
Like, Pregnon slipped quite a bit from where I thought he was going to go.
He did. That was surprising. A guy who maybe had an outside chance of being a first-round pick fell all the way to the third round.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, though, that was, as somebody who did watch the Oregon spring game this weekend, that was one of the coolest moments of it, was it was going on. The draft was still going on.
There were guys there being drafted,
there
right?
There were guys. Well, Betcher
was drafted.
And some of the other guys, like, you would just hear a random ovation sound because they were doing it in the middle of the spring game. They would come on with the sound, you know,
and
then they would show the pick on the Jumbotron, and the whole crowd would erupt at it, and everybody would react. So there were some really cool moments out of the spring game in that regard.
So I don't really, I'm not going to be the guy that pretends to know who won the draft, who didn't. Like, I think you can look
at, nobody knows.
I mean, yeah, there's a lot to that. Reaches, not reaches. Like, I love the Cleveland draft picks. Does that mean Cleveland suddenly as an organization has gotten it right? Is Monken the guy? I mean, I don't know. They took my guy, Talen Green, which you
they
know
did.
I'm all in on that. But
after taking Gabriel in the third round,
they've had three quarterbacks in two drafts.
God.
Not to mention they still have Deshaun Watson on their roster.
Yes, making $900 million next year.
So, you know, like, I'm not qualified enough. All I'll do is I'll kind of use some stats that I saw that I think are interesting to pass along, okay?
Okay.
So, obviously, I'm pretty plugged into seeing the NFC West stuff. I'm a Niner fan. I see a lot of Rams stuff. I still didn't have a takeaway come Monday that McVay was all in on that pick, by the way.
He changed his tone. He did some interviews.
That's
he
because
just
they
was
saw
trying-
the internet. That's because they saw the internet and the reaction to his clear, I don't know what's going on.
The part of it that I just won't get is maybe he would have gotten a couple of picks out for that. Like, it was there any chance that you were going to get him in the second round and with trading out of the 13th pick and getting more assets if you didn't want to take somebody there have been the smarter move? Like, that's the big head-scratcher for me.
So, Seahawks, Rams, Niners, if you want to throw Cardinals in there, you can, but they're the goofy ones of the division. And I was looking at people reacting to it, in which somebody we know was texting me going crazy about the Niner picks because the Niners had a few picks, including their third-round running back pick.
Ah,
Lynch and Shanahan are notorious for reaching.
Reach.
They're reaching for guys that are going largely undrafted on mocks or like sixth round at best. Kalen Black, who they took in the third as a running back, like another running back in the third round, it's not been a great track record for them. But they've also had all the success. And so I understand people being mad. I also look at it and go, it's hard to argue when you have...
There's a balance there.
Yeah, and I think ego gets involved here, right? But I looked at this graph from Next Gen. It's stats draft class rankings, okay? So this is the average score of the first seven picks, okay? Now, these are teams and what they've been doing with their picks. Less traits, more production, okay? So this is a good quality. This is an area you like. Commanders, Ravens, Panthers, Texans, Seahawks are bordering on the line.
Mm-hmm.
Broncos, Rams also bordering on the line. Chiefs. You look at those orgs and you say Super Bowl champion, multi-Super Bowl winner, AFC West champion,
yep.
Super Bowl champion a couple years ago, in NFC West or NFC Championship game this year. Panthers made the playoffs.
Yep.
Texans are always in the divisional round.
Always in the mix.
Ravens are the Ravens. Yep. Commanders just a couple years ago, right? Right on the border teetering line of that and more traits, more production, the Chargers are sitting there. And then it's Eagles, Jets,
hey!
Cardinals,
hey!
Browns, Raiders, Bucks. Okay? Now below, this is a four-part graph. On the left bottom is less traits, less production. Then you get into Lions, Falcons, Jags, Bengals, Cowboys barely below the line. Vikings are sitting on the line with that and more traits, less production. Giants, Colts, Dolphins, Titans, Steelers, Pats, Niners, Saints, Bills.
Okay.
So it's more about, to me,
interesting,
looking at the, oh, his traits aren't great, but he's absolutely performing. Or, oh, his traits are great and he's performing. Oh, less traits, not great production, and then reaches.
Yes, total reaches.
And seeing where all of the teams in the four-part graph, that gives me a better understanding the draft than, Pete Prisco at CBS Sports saying, these are my draft grades. And I'm like, you're not a draft analyst.
This is my favorite pick of the draft.
Yeah, like yeah. Those articles Nobody are all knows. Out there, but it's just right. Like most of these people aren't covering the draft like that.
No.
Now, I look at the people who do, but... Yeah, it's hard to really have grandiose takeaways. Fans who live and breathe the draft, they're going to have their own evaluations and thoughts. But like, also there is the part of wait and see. Wait and see.
Were you telling me that my mock and my prediction on this player isn't 100% accurate of how his career is going to go? Is that what you're telling me right now?
Well, right. And you do have a history of this. The
of
Niners
course you do, yeah.
do have a history of when you look at like, and Warren Sharp was all on this all weekend. He was all over the Niners.
Yes, he was.
They do reach, mm-hmm. and a lot of their guys don't hit. And so like, there's an element of truth, but also sprinkled in there is the wait and see. And then it's also a breakdown of like, there's some really good teams who are also in the Niner camp. The Seahawks are in this. The Patriots are in this. The Steelers are in this. Like, the Rams have moments where they reach and don't hit. So,
yeah.
Like, a lot of teams do reaching, some teams more than others. It's just, I look at it more that vantage point than saying, like, oh, the Jets won the draft this year. They're the Jets.
Right.
They'll find a way to ruin this.
It's funny because I felt like two of the headlines for me coming out of the weekend, I didn't follow the reaction to every single team's collective draft, right? Like, I don't have enough time, nor do I have enough care to do that. Two that did seem to stick out in terms of the reaction from pundits and national voices and all of that were San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I saw a lot of that this weekend of the arguments about Lynch and he's reaching and he's not a good drafter. Where there's certainly some truth to that, dude. The guy has struck out a number of times. And the counterpoint to that would be, well, what GM doesn't, right? Like, we're in the middle of crowning John Schneider, rightfully so. He just won a Super Bowl championship. His second title.
Yeah.
What was the talking point about him for the last 5 years? He can't find an offensive lineman. How many guys did he whiff on in the draft that weren't impact guys? Under Russ, they could never get it figured out up front. Like, he had issues. Every GM is going to have their ups and downs. So I certainly understand the criticism of Lynch, although to your point, when you've won that much as an organization, maybe, again, the argument is it's because you got an elite head coach John Lynch is not an elite GM, and the coach overcomes that. Could be true. I get why, from their perspective, they're kind of bowing their chest a little bit, saying, like, dude, look at it. We're in the playoffs every year.
We're in the mix every year.
Like,
right.
You're going to criticize me for drafting when we've had this run of success over the last however many years. I understand where the approach is. The other team who was in this same category, some would even argue worse than that, would be Jacksonville. Jacksonville took like a tight end in the third round that was projected to go undrafted.
Yeah, there were a lot of people that didn't like Jacksonville's
draft. And their
draft.
GM comes out afterwards and says, well, very similar
the
to John Lynch. The Wonder Kid
says,
well, who cares about outside evaluation? We evaluate these guys.
Yeah.
And it might not be consensus amongst teams. We saw something in this player that we like. The funny part about yelling about it or crowing this or that in the aftermath of the draft is you're likely going to have to eat your words in one way or the other months down the road, because there will be drafts that we criticize right now that turn out next year to be impactful drafts and have guys playing right away at a high level, and vice versa. Drafts that we look at and say, man, I love what that team did. And then they fell flat, you know, on their face, and it never really quite worked out. That's why reacting to all of this is incredibly difficult. The NFC West angle is interesting. Like the Niners, I don't know where they fit with Seattle and LA. They certainly were close last year. We'll see if they can stay healthy next year.
They weren't close, though. Like, they want, they split,
I would say
they were early
in the year before injuries piled up. Back half of the year, certainly not. They got demolished by Seattle a couple of times and couldn't move the ball to save their lives. But I also think injuries played a huge part of that. The Rams one, like, a lot of people are kind of dunking on the Rams right now. And again, I get it, because nobody saw Simpson going 13 to them. And it feels a little reachy. The McVay stuff was really weird. Mm-hmm. The other part of that, though, in the back of my mind is, the Rams had two first-round picks this year. Remember, they made the trade with Atlanta for Pierce, which, by the way, those Chargers completely going away. That's a whole story we haven't even talked about yet.
As long as you say you're sorry and you seek proper help, this will all go away.
Sure, no big deal here. Just chasing her down on the highway, ramming his car into her, nothing to see here.
He's really lucky that she was like, let's move on.
The 13th pick they got in that trade, so that was the Simpson one. They also had their pick, which was, what, 28th, 29th? I can't remember exactly. What did that pick turn into? Trent McDuffie. Mm-hmm. There was teams who were taking corners in the back end of the first round. The kid from San Diego State went around that same area.
Yep.
The Rams acquired one of the best corners in the NFL. And yeah, they had to pay him. But again, in LA, that doesn't seem to be a problem with the salary cap. And so they turned one of their first round picks into one of the best young corners in all of football.
Right.
And so on the one hand, I want to criticize your first round of saying, why would you take Ty Simpson 13th overall? On the other hand, they unquestionably got better this offseason. And so I can critique that pick while also acknowledging, yeah, dude, you're not going anywhere. Your window is still wide open, and you were a couple of plays away from beating Seattle in the NFC title game. So I have a hard time reacting to all of it, because it ends up aging like milk in August, and none of us have any idea how these players are going to be. Still fun, though, because it will create a lot of opinions from media members across the league.
Yeah, I mean, if you just look within the division, so this is the so Warren Sharp put this one, and this is based on draft capital over expectation.
Yes.
So expected capital to be used on player versus actual use. Yep. Okay? He did a graph on this. You look at it right now, reaches. When you go to the reaches, Seattle's 27th, the Rams were 31st, the Niners were 32nd, the Cardinals were 28th.
So they're all in the bottom of the league?
So, like, I guess my thing is, and I certainly have questions, too, about anybody, I think, does with picks, right? Yeah. I just, like, you're telling me the Seahawks who just won it, we've seen them reach before. The tough thing is just the analysis of, like, this guy should be fired, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. And then you see the teams on this list, the Broncos, the Steelers, the Bears, the Seahawks, the Rams, the Jags, the Texans, the Niners, like, oh, the Chargers are on this side of the graph. Like, and then you look at the positive side, Commanders, Panthers, Colts, Bengals, Jets, Giants, Raiders. I mean, a lot of those teams don't have like...
Right, these are also all built off of largely a... I don't know, faulty premise is the right phrase.
Yeah, but it's an evaluation of non-operating NFL general managers.
Yes.
I think that's my hard thing is, like, not that there isn't some things to raise the alarms about, but we are reacting to the people who create the imaginary versus the deciders who don't create an imaginary. They just do it.
They just do it.
Now, I'm not saying the guys who create mocks don't know what
they're
talking about.
They're all wrong, or the guys who are the GMs are all right. Of course, that's not the case.
There's always an
in-between. There's a lot of good and bad on both sides.
And I have respect for the people that actually put in work, like the real ones, the Dane Brugglers, the Matt Millers, the, you know what I mean, the Jeremiah, Daniel Jeremiah's, like the Bucky Brooks. There's a lot of people that, like, devote what they do to this, and I have a lot of respect for that. That's why I read and consume their content. I also, on the other side, have people actually in the organization, actually grinding tape, actually with scouts, like having real breakdowns of this stuff.
Right.
And I'm just supposed to believe that because the mocks were wrong or the evaluations of talent going in were one thing, that because they weren't, it means those guys are idiots. Especially when you name that many good teams. John Schneider, like I called it out last year. They went on a Super Bowl run. I'm an idiot. He was right.
Yeah.
The Rams, they've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, we can criticize the Ty Simpson pick all we want, but what if Stafford retires in 2 years and he takes over the reins and he's running McVay's offense at a high level?
The Texans have an elite defense every year, and they're seemingly in the divisional round. The Jags took a huge step. The Bears took a huge step. The Steelers are seemingly always in the mix. Sean Payton has got a lot of respect in Denver. Like, all of these organizations that I look at and go, man, those are well-run organizations, seemingly in this, oh, did they reach? How big of a reach was this? And I'm like, well,
it was based off of a media premise. That's The interesting part, and we'll get to a couple local angles here in a second. When you were going on that rant, I thought of our own organization here in town. Who did we hire to be our assistant general manager?
Mike Schmitz.
Yeah, a guy who came from the TV world, evaluating prospects for the ESPN for the NBA draft. Who did you take in the first round last year?
Well, he illegally contacted him and then took him.
Is this suspension lifted yet?
Yeah, he was there. I saw him pregame.
Was he there? Okay.
I saw him pregame talking to somebody.
Sorry, just sometimes, you know.
But it's an early wait and see.
That it is.
Year two of Young, loading, because when Rob Will goes to a contender,
that's right.
We're actually going to have to play Young Hansen as our backup next year.
Oh, God. Let's get to some of the local guys. Where did they end up? And then any takeaways from spring football this week? We can get to that bottom of the hour. A little football block of the show on a Monday. Back after this on The Fam.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Did you watch the very real / fake football this weekend?
Sure didn't. I saw a highlight. I saw Raiola hit Stewart in stride. And
people thought he looked chunky. Uh-oh. Dylan, a little fat.
Wasn't he always kind of chunky?
Yeah, I didn't really have that takeaway. I just know that became a social media thing from this weekend that I chuckled about.
He's also the backup. Why do we care about what he looks like right now?
I don't really care.
I did not see Oregon State, but I did get two random texts on Saturday. Oof, if this is the Beavs, it's going to be a long season. And I went, that bad, huh?
I mean, it was a pretty long. Yeah, all right, hold that.
But did you see it? I didn't see it.
I did not see. I didn't know it was on television. I don't know if they televised it. I thought you had to be there in person in order to watch it.
I assume you were right.
But I don't know. We'll get to that coming up in a moment. Some local angles. The guys we talked about, obviously, on Friday, Sadiq went to the Jets, 16th overall, poor bastard. Dylan Thieneman to the Bears, 25th overall. So they were the first-round picks. Friday, you had Emmanuel Pregnon went in the third round, fall all the way to Jacksonville. I was kind of surprised by that one. I thought he was going to go higher than that. I didn't think there was a lot of red flags there. He's a no-nonsense guy, an incredibly serious, focused, like just one of those, like, don't mess with him, which is exactly what you want on the offensive line.
The takeaway that I also got from the draft, and I think this is where Pregnon falls, it seems that internally with organizations, this was a very weird draft to evaluate.
Yes.
When you don't have quarterback heavy draft, if for whatever reason you would think like they'd be licking their chops and like maybe have it more dialed. It's almost like the no quarterback thing breaks brains, because then you're like, wait a minute, we're third?
What are we supposed to take now?
We're fifth? wait, and we don't have a quarterback option? Like I feel like it just shakes the draft up in it, like it's a big wave. It just starts from the top and it waves its way all the way throughout. And so I'm kind of with you, because Pregnon was maybe a late first round mock to early second, and he fell to the third. And then I saw the takeaway of this seemed to be a very weird year for NFL general managers and organizations to evaluate from a what is, to our earlier conversation, what's a reach, what's not a reach, who do you take, when do you take them, all
everybody
that
will have a different perspective. Kennedy went in the fourth round, so did Betcher. Kennedy went to the Chiefs, Betcher went to the Colts. Malik Benson and Alex Harkey were sixth-round picks. Harkey getting drafted, like, all right, good luck with that one. Benson went to the Raiders, and Harkey went to the Chargers, I believe, if I'm not
Chargers,
wrong on that point. So
Harkey's a Charger.
So that was some of the local guys that went. Washington had seven guys drafted overall. One of them went to one of the corners, went to your San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah.
I will say
Coleman went to the Broncos.
Yeah, Coleman went to the Broncos. Two other, like, decent-sized Denzel Boston, by the way, so apologies. Similar to Kenyon Sadiq, have fun playing in Cleveland. That sucks. And no, Mike Greenberg, that is not David Boston's kid. I love when we're reminded of how little national media people watch college football. Like, I know that Washington wasn't a top five team in the country. Like,
that's tough.
How do you, you're the lead drafted? How do you, what? He's a second round pick.
He shouldn't be the lead.
Well, I know. He's the host. He's the MC, if you will.
I almost wonder, like, why Field Yates doesn't just host it, because he also watches and covers it.
We also had a nice little fight. Did you see I certainly wasn't watching, but I saw the clips. There was a Charles Davis, Daniel Jeremiah fight.
Oh.
Yeah.
They're pretty tight.
I don't know about it anymore. They got it. One of those, like, this is a little booth tension.
I guess
right
I
now.
Missed that. What was the fight over?
It was either Saturday or Sunday. I can't remember what day. I just saw it on Awful Announcing. We can pull the audio if you want. I don't know if we want. It's like,
let's do it.
It's two straight minutes of them yelling at each other about Fernando Mendoza playing this year. And Daniel Jeremiah's argument is he's not going to play this year. Tom Brady talks about how we ruin young quarterbacks and we don't develop them properly. That's why they went out and got Kirk Cousins. And basically this whole, like, he's not going to play. He's going to sit for over half the season. And Charles Davis is like, you're an idiot. He's the number one pick in the draft. He's like, Kirk Cousins might start the year, but he's definitely playing in the first 6 weeks of the season.
Oh, I'm seeing it right here. Who would have thought that this synergy would bring us First Take in the seventh round of the draft?
Yes, that was what it was, seventh round. Like, and I'm just like, what am I watching right now? And Eisen's awkwardly on there like, what is happening? These guys are just going at each other's throats. It's an old Skip versus Stephen A. debate. A couple other takeaways that I thought just overarching from the draft. One, it is alarming when you look at, and I can pull up the numbers specifically, when you look at the number of players drafted, this is more of a college football angle, to be honest, from Power 4 to Group of 6 to FCS level, like, it is jaw-dropping how much those numbers have changed, because if you're a good player at the lower levels, what do? You transfer to a Power 4 school, you get out of the G6, all that, you get out of the FCS. And so the percentage breakdowns used to be a little bit more even, and now it is just overwhelmingly Power 4 schools and then a small, small sliver Group of 6 and then on down from there. And the other side of that is I saw a lot of quotes from anonymous people in front offices this weekend saying, you know what has really fundamentally changed the draft? The one thing we thought maybe it could? NIL. The number of guys who are getting paid a decent amount of money to stay who would have been, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth round picks, but decided, dude, I got a big payday in college. It's probably more than my rookie contract. Maybe I can play my way up. A lot of guys are choosing to stay one more year because of the financial impact of it instead of going to the draft, and it's weakening some of the further down draft boards in the later rounds.
I saw some of that complaint. I forgot what team it was. It was the Ravens. I think it was DaCosta was like, NIL's killing the talent, and
I don't know about killing the talent, but I think it waters down the pool a little bit.
You deal with it. Yeah. Like, you think it's their fault? Like, if you could go to the Ravens and make $680,000 to get your brains beat in by NFL players or come back,
the school's paying me 1.5
to a college and make 1.2 to 2.5, like, I'm doing that all day. So, like, I've seen that complaint. I've also seen the mocks for next year.
Ooh, who do we got? Number one, Arch Manning.
Well, next year, look, it's
Jeremiah Smith has to be number one, right?
It's fair to remind ourselves that at this time a year ago, we were all like, Nussmeier,
Aller,
Klubnik, Aller.
By the way, talking about reaches, people were livid that he went as high as he did.
There's a host in Pittsburgh that tweeted out, if in 250 days the Steelers draft Drew Aller, I think he said quit.
Uh-oh.
They drafted him.
Uh-oh.
251 days later, and the guy was like, thank God. He wasn't going to quit, but it was just a funny, like, oh my Lord, look how close we were to actually making this happen. But it's a reminder of, like, we thought something about last year's class, and none of it ended up being right. So let's just take that and look at next year.
Yes.
Jeremiah Smith is not number one. It is indeed Arch Manning.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you right now, I know his name. I don't know what his production's going to be. You want to post it? Arch Manning will not be the number one pick next year.
Oh, dude, I'm writing that down right now.
Book it.
I'm going to go find a post-it. I will not forget in the break. We will
Book
write
it.
That down.
Jeremiah Smith, power rank 2.
Okay.
Dante Moore, 3rd.
Hey.
Now, some mocks, they have him as number one.
Yeah.
Cam Coleman, Texas, wide receiver. Julian saying, good luck, by the way, drafting that cat. Not in any way a Saiyan fan. Leonard Moore, Notre Dame cornerback. Dylan Stewart, edge rusher, South Carolina. Yep. He's going to be higher than 7th.
Yes, he will.
A.J. Holmes, defensive line, Texas Tech.
Mm-hmm.
Carter Smith, tackle at Indiana. Colin Simmons at Texas. Mm-hmm. He's an edge rusher.
Yes, he is.
And then you kind of look through it. C.J. Carr is on this list. Jamari Johnson, 15th from Oregon.
Oh, how about that?
Mateo, 23rd. And Amari Washington, 29th.
Mateo going that high would be surprising. He's leaned up this offseason. Let's connect
His
that.
Numbers were bad, but I think this, I mean, this is it for him.
This, yeah.
So better mean, be having, what did he finish with last year? 3 sacks?
I'll pull it up. It wasn't very good. He's leaned up in the offseason, and that leads directly into my next segment. And let's talk a little bit about the football we saw. Evidently ugly in Corvallis. What do we make out of it out of Eugene? Don't worry, I did watch, so I'll give you any takeaways in case you didn't. Not a ton out of the weekend, but we'll get to it, and we'll react to it next on The Fam. All right, welcome back in. Who the hell knows what draft takes, but I love it. Love sharing them. Why not?
I mean, I get a lot of draft takes, and, you know, there's still a lot of wait and see. And
yeah, I mean, I was just joking with the boss because he's a big Giants fan. I saw him walking in. He's like, yeah, I like the draft, but I was listening to you guys, kind of the same takeaway, like, who the hell knows? I liked the Evan Neal pick, and I'm like, yeah, that's the way. I thought Elliott Williams was going to be an all-star in Portland.
I just, like, if you're going to be like, why did we take this guy in the fifth round?
Who the hell knows, man?
He was projected to go undrafted. I'm like, was he?
The 49ers' starting quarterback right now, who saved them from the quagmire that
literally
was Trey Lance,
draft.
Was Mr. Irrelevant in the NFL draft. So none of us know what we're talking about. Let's get to, by the way, some thoughts coming in on Pregnon about the age, and maybe that dipped him down the boards a little bit. That certainly could be the case.
No doubt.
I know he was an older college football player.
But the mocks didn't have. All I'm saying is, like, the mocks were, like, late first, might sneak in. Second, mid-second, oh, here he is. He's in the third. And it's not like, oh, it's not to me like, what are these teams passing on for? It's more like, well, they clearly didn't see the same thing that the mocks saw.
They certainly did not. Let's get to the spring football. Did you watch any of it?
I mean, like, by watch, do you mean, did I see the highlight of Raiola throwing to Stewart and
Stride?
Did
you see a highlight? Yeah, you saw a highlight?
Was Benetti on the call that?
That was not Benetti. It was, I don't know the guy's name. It was some random dude and Kenyon Barner were calling the game.
Well, I heard Barner.
Yeah.
But the highlight kind of sounded like, I'm like, Benetti wouldn't be calling this. He's got to be at a Tiger series or something, right?
I thought the same thing when I turned it on, of like, that voice sounds familiar. Then they put him in, they showed the camera in the booth and it was like, that's definitely not Jason Benetti. Sounded somewhat similar to him.
No, I did not watch.
What's the matter with you? You got better things to do on
there is nothing to
Saturday?
Learn from these games. it is maybe the dumbest thing that you care about is spring football, and I get all the bad and good takes from both these programs, I go, can we wait and see anything against relevant team?
There's no concrete takeaways. There's none whatsoever. It's spring football. It is what it is. It's a chance to get to watch some of the young guys for the first time. The main thing for me coming out of it is there is a sincere pride that I have and turning it on every year and seeing it somehow get bigger than the year before. They had
attendance-wise?
They had almost
46, right?
46,000 people were at a practice this weekend.
And my takeaway would be, you couldn't find a hiking trail or a lake or the go to the beach.
This is what I love, though, dude. Like, we get hit with the label all the time on the West Coast, so we don't care about sports as much, and we're not as passionate.
I'm okay with them not caring about this.
I mean, it's fine, dude. We have every other Saturday the rest of the spring and summer to go on a hike.
No doubt.
What is it to take one Saturday to go to a free football practice?
Sounds like a guy that loves free football practice.
Sounds like a guy who wants a little more support for his program down. Corvallis. Would you have 46 people in your crowd? Look, I genuinely take pride in this.
They filled up the lower bowl.
I don't think they did.
No, they didn't.
I would have gone, but then I ended up stumbling into Blazer tickets, and I didn't get home till midnight on Friday night. And I'm like, I'm not turning around and driving 2 hours first thing in the morning.
You also were sick a little bit at the end of the week.
Like, this isn't going to happen. But next year, I genuinely think that I'm going to take Teddy down to the game because it's just fun, man. As long as the weather's nice, run around. There's no real sense of, like, I'm missing action if my kid wants to leave the stadium and go run around the concourse. The reason why it is a big deal is because this is a big recruiting weekend for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they had shout going on at the end of the third quarter. The whole teams were out there and the recruits were raving about it. And so they turned it into a winning weekend for them. And we can make fun of the idea of watching a spring football game. I certainly understand that.
The draft thing is also a smart move of
like
make
dude, they're
the draft
showing
noise.
The draft. Yeah. There's the draft noise on the jumbotron.
You don't need to sell me on what it means for the program.
It's a very prideful thing for me of like, that's cool, dude. I'm glad that we care. I'm glad that we go. It just means more out here. And we're the only team on the West Coast that does that. Nobody else sniffs the attendance numbers.
No.
And I'm very prideful of that. Outside of that, from a football standpoint, you want your takeaways? Evan Stewart's back in a uniform, which is a great sign. Now, he was wearing a non-contact jersey, so he was wearing the green.
Make the touchdown less impressive?
He argued after the game, because don't worry, I watched his press conference, that he would have scored either way, because he ran a fade and he beat the guy off the line of scrimmage. So he argued that he would have scored either way, and I think he's right on that one. It did change his calculus probably a little bit, running a slant over the middle when he made a couple of catches where he would have got hit, knowing that he can't get hit.
Sure.
But I think just seeing the reminder of him back in a uniform was great, because he missed all of last year. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I think the other guy that we've kind of circled, a lot of knowns about this team, a lot of guys who are back for another year. DeCorian Moore and the pop that you're going to get from him in year two is going to be a massive storyline for Oregon next year. And he came out on the opening drive, and I want to say Dante only played one series the entire game. It was the first drive of the game, and they scored a touchdown. I think he went to DeCorian three or four times, and they seemingly had a good rapport, which they did last year, but his season was cut short via injury in the back half of the year. So, look, I don't blame anybody for not having football takeaways. I don't have a lot of them. You split the offensive lineup, so you have a defensive line that's largely dominating. Does that mean your offensive line sucks and your defensive line is great?
Yeah, because they play a real game.
They play a real game. Yeah. So you have three starting offensive linemen on one team and two starting offensive linemen on the other team, and so the defensive line is just going to win largely in that regard.
Well, also going in, your defensive line, breaking news, is better than
they brought a lot
line.
Of guys back this year, no doubt about it. But I think the wide receivers were the two guys I identified. This is the biggest thing. Just Evan Stewart, great to see him in uniform again, back in action. Some guys were banged up and didn't play. Jeremiah McClellan was one of them. And DeCorian Moore, I thought, had a nice little pop. Outside of that, seeing Dylan Raiola in a Duck uniform, I will admit, very, very weird. I've seen the highlights. I've seen the practice film, you know, here or there when they put out stuff on social media.
Yeah.
Seeing it in a game, little strange. That's still going to take a while to get used to.
Yeah, I just, look, the Oregon State side, I had people telling me, like, how unimpressed it was. I don't even know.
They don't have enough bodies to run a spring game. They're doing a thing like 2 points for punts.
Well, they missed field goals, so that was awful to see continue. Murphy, I guess, was the best quarterback of the bunch when they because they were doing more situational stuff,
yes,
I think. Like
you
third
can't
and
play
15.
A full game.
And,
right.
Yeah, they don't have the bodies to play a full game. And it's been that way in Corvallis forever. It's been that way back to Mike Riley's second 10 years. So it's cool. What's cool to me is I don't know about sellouts. I think that's a bit much right now. It's cool to me that he's bringing back into the full, like, not that Bray was anti, right? But like seeing Brandon Cooks on the sidelines and doing social media, and he's like, dude, he's got some juice. And just seeing he brought Mitch Canham on to be an offensive play caller jokingly and having fun. Like,
right.
Just getting different vibes because Trent Bray was one of them. Yeah, he's one of those, but like also operated in a very more strict, non-fun manner outside of the team itself. Other than that, dude, I don't even know who the team is.
Yeah.
You want me to be really frank,
it's completely
about it.
New. Like, all of it.
There's going to be some names that go, oh, yeah. And there's going to be a lot of names. Who? Where?
Yeah.
What?
Who?
And Oregon State's got a lot to prove to go from 2-10 to whatever this is going to be year one.
Yeah.
If I have any takeaways, and I don't, but like for you, my only question follow up wouldn't be like, how was the game? It'd be more like, was there any difference in play calling, or is it just such a talented group that it kind of looks the same in terms of decisions to call what plays and
there
what
was
moments?
A takeaway
and,
there.
Okay, and you're going to deliver one.
Yeah.
But even then, I'm still going to be countering with, let's see it in games against real teams with tape and all that.
Yeah.
But what is your takeaway?
Well, Landon came out after the game and said, look, we're just running the basics.
The
basic level of offense that we possibly could. You know what? They did not run a single time the entire game. And I looked up at the heavens and I said, thank you, Jesus.
Ooh, what is it?
Not a single bubble screen. No wide receiver
bubble.
That's
not going away.
They ran some RPOs that were a little more unique that I don't remember them running a ton of that were like post-snap RPOs.
Yeah.
That they didn't do. I don't feel like they did a lot of, but maybe I'm wrong in that regard. I don't know exactly what every play call is, obviously. Felt like it was a little more RPO heavy. I mean, just wide receiver screens, I get that they can be impactful. I get that you want to stretch the defense sideline to sideline. They suck. They suck to watch. The one that hits out of every nine, you're like, yeah! And then the other ones go nowhere because the guy misses a block and you get tackled and it's second and nine and it's like we should have just ran the ball there.
Yeah.
No bubble screens to wide receivers, and that was a welcome sign. But to your point, they probably will end up calling some in the regular season.
Yeah.
There, ladies and gentlemen, we bid adieu to our spring football.
We had so much coverage.
So much coverage. Wall to wall.
We had one interview with Jamarcus Shepherd. You were out for that one.
I was not here for that.
Yeah. That was fine.
Yeah, it was good.
Hey, you could clearly tell he was arriving to the facility because it went from car to ding ding ding. Shut the door.
Don't forget your keys, coach. Make sure you get the. I would give you one other takeaway. This is really dumb, but I'm going to complain about a broadcast of a spring game.
Oh, my God. Really?
I know.
What would you possibly complain about?
I love all the alumni who have come and gone from Oregon.
Just go to break. Don't do it. I know what you're doing. Don't
I
do
love
it.
All.
Don't
thank
do
you
it.
For your service.
He might be on the program.
Thank you for your service.
Nope.
I'm not mentioning anybody by name.
We know what you're doing. It's pretty awful.
I don't need all the player interviews. There were a lot of... I watched.
What else is it for?
Just watching football.
But it's not real football.
It's real to me, damn it! Like, D'Amador Lenore is getting interviewed, which is just really weird because, one, he hasn't been back since he left. Do you know who his head coach was? Do you know how long ago that was?
Mario.
Yeah, and Willie Taggart.
That's right. He was there for
Willie. He was recruited by Willie Taggart.
That's right.
He's like, yeah, I haven't been back in 10. Like, thank you for coming back and talking to the team and all that.
It is spring football.
I don't need an
you
interview.
Little Grinch.
I don't need an interview, okay?
What else do you need to see?
I miss an explosive.
Don't they still show the game while they're interviewing them?
No, they're on this. They're just hearing the crowd react. They're just showing the guy on the sideline.
Can I tell you something?
I missed a crowd reaction. What happened? I want to know.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah, what do you got?
You didn't miss anything. They ran for 5 yards.
You don't know that.
And the crowd who chose to go to that game instead of the beautiful beach was like, yeah!
It was actually really funny because during two of the player interviews were the biggest crowd pops because of the draft picks, and they couldn't cut off of the player interview to show the crowd react. I think it was Betcher and Malik Benson who both went, and the crowd goes crazy, and you're like, I wonder what's happening in the background. I'm hearing a D'Amador Lenore interview right now. Yeah, you know, I haven't been here in 9 years, but it's cool to be back.
Think Betcher's going to be good?
No. I'm rooting for him, though.
I weirdly got confidence for the Colts for whatever reason.
I don't think he's athletic enough to play linebacker in the NFL, but I hope I'm wrong in that regard.
Does he become a baseball player?
I don't think he's good enough. Oh. I think he's in the hall of really good at both sports, not...
Great college player,
yes.
Not great NFL
Phenomenal
guy.
Phenomenal story. I'm rooting like hell. I always do for the local guys, Oregon and Oregon State included. It's cool to see him get drafted, but no, I think he went where he deserved to go in the draft, and now, hey, you never know, man. Sixth round pick, we'll see if it works out. Let's get to, with that back into the Blazers coming up top of the hour, we got a poll question up. We'll remind you of that in a moment. Let's get to some other nuggies out of the, well, kind of pun intended, the NBA playoffs that we have not talked about yet, where all the other series are at and where they go from here. We'll get to that next on The Fan.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
One other totally random note that came out this morning. My football team evidently is going to Japan this offseason.
Tokyo.
All right.
Ramen, baby.
That's one of my favorite random Anthony Newman stories is that he played a game at Oregon in Tokyo.
So they've had a history here.
I don't know if one time makes it a history, but maybe it does.
Well, it's the second time now.
That's true. We are return trip members to Tokyo.
Does Tokyo have college football?
I don't think so.
It's Tokyo University?
I thought it was a bowl game.
Anthony's was a bowl game.
Yes.
But it was back in the day where they used to do like a, it was like a wraparound where they played it in like August, I think he said. It wasn't at the end of the season. It was the start
of next.
Oh, it
was like the Dublin game?
Something like that, but it didn't count. It was a bowl game, but it was, I don't know. The way he explained it, I'm like, none of this makes any sense, but I get it. You played a game in Tokyo? Yeah, why they're going to do drills in 7 months. That's one of the
Wait, so who's going? It's Dante, Dan.
Dante, Dan, DeCorian.
DeCorian.
And
gotta be a D-lineman.
Because
I need one of them to be sumo.
Ooh, a little sumo
we
exhibition.
We need a little sumo. I need Mateo to try to push a sumo and a sumo show Mateo.
A sushi eat off.
This is a different level of strength.
Wouldn't that be
buddy.
Washington? Washington be the guy
He'd
to do that.
He'd be for sure the big
well,
or
I just don't
bear.
Know who's going to go. You know, whoever it is, Mateo, I would imagine, be the guy to get to go on that trip.
I'd imagine if you're one of the guys on the team, you're kind of lined up like, hey, can I get a free chartered flight to Tokyo for a week? That sounds like a great
Maybe that's
time.
Why Dan's doing it.
Go eat some awesome food. What a cool benefit.
You think the chances are Dan Lanning's family is with him on that trip? Because I'd say pretty highly.
I said pretty high there, Bob.
Yeah, pretty
I say pretty high there, Bob. All righty, basketball Sprague.
Yeah.
How are we feeling about the NBA playoffs so far?
Well, not great.
Is it filling your hole? You got some hole fill-worthy storylines.
Yeah, but there's some also some, like, I
empty holes.
I still think the Sixers and Celtics thing is a dud. I know that they won in game two, but
they're now up 3-1. They killed them. Embiid came back, and it didn't matter.
Embiid came back, and it actually got worse.
Yes, it did.
You know, the Piston Magic thing is pretty shocking.
Yeah, game four tonight. Orlando's up 2-1.
I think they could go up 3-1.
Yes.
I was wrong on that prediction for Friday's Sprague 17 parlay.
Thunder Suns, not worth watching.
Thunder
terrible.
Suns has not been
No,
a
that's
second.
Why they're on the Peacock Network and the other two are on NBC.
And Cavs Raptors, weirdly, is 2-2, and yet I'm like, still don't care.
You still don't care, huh?
And I have a Cavs futures on the East, which I am just ready. I've burned that ticket mentally.
Can I care a little bit more than that for that one?
Absolutely.
You
think they're going to beat...
No, I don't think they're going
but
anywhere.
But then again, what if it's Orlando? Could be Orlando against the Raptors.
Can I just say another takeaway for me so far of the playoffs is we are getting expansion in, what, a year, 2 years?
2 years.
2 years?
I think 29, yeah.
I know that you don't want to be too caught in the moment of where things are currently at and, like, project 20, 30 years down the line. If you're Adam Silver, how do you not get an Oklahoma City or a San Antonio out of the West?
Well, you have to play the map game, actually.
I don't care about the map game.
But he is going to.
I don't
to.
Care. You know what's further west than both Oklahoma City and San Antonio?
What?
Seattle. You know what else is?
Yeah.
Vegas.
Yeah.
So you want to have New Orleans or Memphis. You could take one of those. I'm fine with. Who's the best team in the Eastern Conference?
Well, I'd probably pick Boston.
Okay.
Like, if I told you who's going to the finals out of the East, would you pick Boston?
Right now.
Right.
Sure.
Because you might have the Hawks beat the Knicks.
Yes.
You might have the Magic beat the
Pistons.
CJ
McCollum's 35, leading them to an upset over New York. They're going to fire their head coach again. They have no future draft capital to trade. Orlando gave up 5 first-round picks for Desmond Bane, had a really depressing first year with him, and now maybe is pulling off a 1-8 upset.
Orlando going to the East Finals would be hilarious.
As an 8 seed.
That's hilarious.
Detroit was the 1 seed. They're down to the 8 seed, so I'm like, okay, nobody's buying you whatsoever.
Detroit having one of the fakest, and we've had 8-1 matchups before, right?
Yes.
You've seen the B. Diddy, Baron Davis Warriors, the We Believe Warriors against the MVP Dirk.
Yes.
There's been upsets. This, maybe more than any other, might be the fakest 60-win season of a team in NBA history.
Thank you.
Because, like,
there's a lot of tankers, and the Eastern Conference sucks.
I'd have to go relook at the box scores. I felt like those Maverick-Warrior games were at least close, competitive, whereas, like, the Pistons got blown out by the Magic in Game 3.
Yes, they did.
And they got ran by them in game one, and they had to go on a 30-3 run in game two.
That was wild. Coming
to win
out of,
it.
That was wild. That run, though, was pretty crazy. I'm like, have they scored a point in 20 minutes? I don't think they have.
Minnesota's been, I mean, I don't know how you didn't get entertained watching them do that without Ann and DiVincenzo. Denver is crumbling right now.
It was great in the moment. I think it was just a tough reaction to it of they don't have a
chance. They
don't
stand a chance.
Like,
I mean,
you're not going anywhere.
Does anybody? Doesn't it
this
feel like
is,
a San Antonio OKC West Finals?
So this is my point. And again, you don't want to overreact too much in the moment, but over the next 10 years, is there any stock you would buy ahead of OKC or San Antonio?
Well, probably not, but I'm not.
Get one of them out of my conference!
I'm not playing the 10-year thing. I'm not going to ever play that in sports.
The East has sucked my entire life outside of LeBron. LeBron is the only thing that has propped up the Eastern Conference for the last half century.
Jordan and then LeBron.
Fine, okay.
Jordan and LeBron.
You have two players. Outside of that, the Eastern Conference has sucked my entire life.
Yeah, largely, you're right.
And it's not changing. And now the two superpowers of the NBA are where?
Well, Boston's probably going to get better.
They're not a superpower.
Tatum being year two off of the
Tatum's
Achilles?
We got a lot to get to in the final hour of the show.
Okay.
I feel like it feels good yelling about the NBA.
Houston, what are they doing, Kevin Durant?
You got to get rid of him. You got to.
So another team's going to tell themselves Kevin Durant now will figure it out?
Now.
The Nets.
Starting.
Wrong situation.
Now.
The Suns.
Phoenix. No.
Houston.
No.
Ime Udoka was the problem.
We have the right spot for you.
There's going to be teams that say, no. We're right for Kevin Durant.
Durantula. Here. Now.
Slim Reaper, please.
Lots to get to in the final hour of the show. We'll dive back into the Blazers. Are you more optimistic or less optimistic after whatever it was we saw this weekend in the first four games of this series? It is a loaded final hour. Dirt and Sprague, 105.1 FM, The Fan.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. 2 new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.